Hi, and thank you for tuning in today for our 2019 Arts Week podcast. I am Marissa, and this is the final episode of our podcast entitled Coloring Outside the Lines, where we discuss the arts with four different members of the King College of the Arts here at Utah State University. For our last episode, we are going to be talking with Professor Corey Christiansen joining us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And discussing your musical career and all your adventures. So before we go into the really good stuff, let's just get to know a little bit about you and your upbringing, how you got into music.
Okay. So I actually grew up in Smithfield, Utah, not far from here. My dad was a professional guitar player. He's the guy that started the guitar program here at Utah State University. I started studying with him when I was 5 years old. And by the time I was about 6 years old, I was convinced I was going to be a professional guitar player when I grew up.
And here you are.
And here I am.
You're doing it.
Now. And, you know, my dad was really great about bringing me music to listen to when I was a young kid. I had my own little turntable, and he used to bring me records to listen to. And my favorite record was Led Zeppelin I when I was 6 years old. And I was convinced that I was going to take over Jimmy Page's job in the band. That hasn't panned out for me yet.
Not yet.
But, yeah, that whole John Bonham thing, you know, kind of with him, that's just not going to happen. I just have to accept that. Yeah. So anyway, but I started playing, I guess, you know, kind of professionally, like not full time, obviously, but a little bit here and there when I was 11 years old. And I had a little rock band, and I had a family band that, you know, my dad and I played guitar, my mom sang, my brother played bass, my sisters sang, did other things. By the time I got to college, I got pretty serious about playing jazz guitar, and I studied here at Utah State. I studied classical and jazz guitar, and played sometimes, you know, four nights a week, and I was teaching, you know, in between, you know, 45 and 60 private students a week, you know, putting myself through school, and graduated here and went off to Florida, to the University of South Florida, to study with some really great musicians that were living down there, and got a master's degree. And I don't know how far you want me to go here, but I could.
Well, I do have a question for you, because
yeah, sure.
I'm a musician as well. So
right.
This is something that I'm wondering, and I'm sure lots of other artists are wondering while they're listening to this. You said you started playing professionally when you were just a kid.
11,
right?
Yeah.
So what was that transition like of just turning it from practicing on your own, going to recitals, and being actually paid to be doing this? How did that process go?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I wasn't playing, like, you know, four nights a week when I was 11 years old.
Yeah,
but I had a little project that was, you know, that was working pretty regularly. And so I don't know. I'm probably not going to be very articulate about what that transition was, because I was so young that I didn't really notice the difference between things like recitals and a paying gig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of it was just the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I've been performing with my, you know, my dad and my parents since the time I was 5 years old. And so, you know, I wasn't getting paid. So, you know, when I was that young, but really I wasn't doing anything different. It just, I started getting, you know, a little bit of money, you know, mm-hmm. coming in. I did start playing clubs. Like, my first bar, a Wyoming bar, was my first gig when I was 13. And so, you know, that was a little bit of a strange transition, you know, when I think about it, as a 13-year-old, because, you know, Wyoming bars used to stay open till 2. So, you know, we'd play a whole weekend, and I'd start, I think, at 9 at night and go till 2, which is not what, you know, like, work hours that 13-year-olds are usually, you know,
yeah.
that are usually keeping, or an environment where, you know, 13-year-olds are usually hanging out. Yeah, the transition was pretty seamless for me, actually.
So let me rephrase the question without, you know, going more into depth. So not even transitioning, how did you get gigs?
It was through a lot of contacts that, like me and my other friends that had this band, had through our parents. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how we got started. And we actually did a lot of, you know, performing at community events, but also at schools, you know, in the area. And, you know, I'm going to show my age here a little bit, but, you know, I came up playing music when, you know, every high school and every church dance, or every high school dance and every church dance was live music. You know, it was kind of like the DJ thing was kind of happening. And, you know, of course, that's always been around. But there still was a really strong environment that supported live music for mm-hmm. everything. So, you know, we played for dances at the high school. You know, we played for, just all kinds of things.
So
it's just a different environment
there.
Than it is now. Yeah.
Yeah. So what advice would you have for students who, see, I'm in the same boat as you because my mom's a musician.
Right.
So I got all my gigs from my mom.
Right.
But
yeah.
What about those who don't have that kind of family connection?
Well, I mean, you know, building a network's a really important part about being a professional anything. And so, you know, I think the best thing that people can do, you know, if you're a musician, is you got to hang out with people who are doing what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, you know, when I moved, like, you know, if I'm transitioning from, you know, like my early career, you know, then like to, let's say, like when I moved to Florida, you know, I started working the second week I was in Florida, you know, playing gigs. But it was because I was hanging out with people that were connected to the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, in my case, I'm a jazz musician, so I would go to jam sessions. And anytime I've ever moved, that's the first thing I do is I find out where are the jam sessions. I go to the jam sessions. And then, you know, if you have a good skill set, then your phone starts to ring. I moved from Florida to St. Louis, where I lived for quite a while. And in St. Louis, the first week I was there, I unpacked the truck. And one of the first things I did is I went to a local music store and I was like, where are the jam sessions? And I made a list of all the jam sessions, and I started to go to jam sessions on the first Wednesday that I was there in town, and I had gigs lined up for the next Friday and Saturday, like 2 days later. And it really, I mean, the advice that I could give people is like you just have to have a skill set that can't be denied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you are just super bad, you know, at what you do, people will call you and you know if you can get your, you know, name out there or let people hear or see, you know, I want to speak to all the arts, but what you can do. But I'm just a huge advocate for, you know, building a network and all of those things. Yes. But you get more opportunities the higher your skill set is.
Mm-hmm. So building that skill set was something that you worked on for years, getting your undergrad. Getting your graduate degree.
And I'll say this.
It's a life process.
Yeah, I got my graduate degree, you know, and I kind of laugh because it's in jazz performance. And, like, I was not a master of jazz performance when I got my degree. Yes, I'd done the coursework and I'd done I had a piece of paper. But, you know, when I moved to St. Louis, I started playing a lot with some really, really serious musicians. And that was where I felt like actually, you know, finished my schooling, you know, and not that I'm finished now. I don't feel like I'm finished, you know, right now. And I run the guitar program here, right? And I, you know, get a fair amount of good gigs. But I don't feel like you ever stop learning or that you should ever, you know, be in that mindset. But when I had the skill set together from my degrees to really go out and work with high-level musicians that were really doing it, and, you know, some of the best musicians in the world, that's where I felt like I had a skill set to learn to play at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I kind of went, and I started working with a guy in St. Louis who really was, I think, the best jazz musician, you know, like in the Midwest. His name was Willie Akins, and he was kind of known in that town for putting a band together where he would take a lot of the best young talent, and he just played gigs with us, and that's how he taught. You know, I mean, we were filling a purpose for him, which is he needed a band to hire of good musicians, But he was filling a purpose for us. One, I mean, he was giving us a little bit of money for playing, but more than that, he just ran an amazing band, and we were just getting our butts kicked night after night after night, and he would give me the business sometimes on stage in front of people. It was awesome. But I look at the alumni of that band from the era that I played in it, and, you know, the drummer that I played with, Emmanuel Harold, has played, you know, was with Gregory Porter, who's a Grammy-winning artist, and he's in the Gregory Porter band, and Jamal Nichols, who's also in that band. Keon Harold kind of came up through that school. He's been the musical director for, you know, Jay-Z and Erykah Badu. He's been in Erykah Badu's band. He's been in Maxwell's band. He's been in D'Angelo's band. I mean, Terry Ongoli, who I think played some with him, has gone on to be with Diana Reeves. And I mean, I could just go down the list of the alumni from this Willie Aiken's band from, you know, like the era that I was in there. Everybody was great. You know, I mean, everybody turned out like to be really, really great musicians, and we got a lot of that from having that mentorship from somebody that had a lot more decades under their belt and a lot more experience. And, you know, I was there to work, but I was there to learn.
So now that's your students looking to you for that experience.
It becomes cyclical.
So can I ask, is this the same band that you had the number one jazz record in North America for a while?
No, different band.
Different band. Let's hear about that.
Yeah. So the band that had we had the number one record, I think in 2007, I think in January of 2007, we had the number one jazz record in North America. It was a band that was comprised of three guitars, bass, and drums. And how that band came apart is I was part of a record label called Mel Bay Records that focused on jazz guitar recordings. And there were three of us on that label that we decided to put a band together and kind of do it as a showcase for the label. And so I basically kind of took charge of the project, because I was also working for the record label, and, you know, put these guys together, and we went in the studio and in 2 days, you know, recorded a record and put it out. And it was such a interesting sound with the three guitars, bass, and drums, and the band is amazing. Like, Danny Gottlieb was playing drums, and he's, you know, a ridiculous musician. He had played with one of my heroes, Pat Metheny, for, you know, maybe the first six records, I think, or something like that. I don't know. They were on the road, you know, forever. And Jay Anderson, New York bassist, and then myself, and a great guitar player named Jimmy Bruno, and a great, like, ridiculously amazing guitar player named Vic Juris. And we just had a ball putting this, you know, this record together. But I think because it had such a unique sound, and we played a lot of really famous jazz standards on that record, that, you know, maybe that's why it did really good, you know, after it was released, really well after it was released.
So speaking of unique sounds, when you and I were talking a few weeks ago, you were telling me about a project that you're working on right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily remember, but I remember it was something super out of the box, kind of weird.
So the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, I guess, I've been really intrigued with, and I guess successful in an artistic way for me, of combining all of my roots, which is, you know, I grew up in Smithfield, Utah. You know, I mean, it's kind of weird that I'm a jazz guitar player. I mean, that is not a zip code. There's like a lot of jazz music happening, right? But I went away and I lived in these urban areas, and I, you know, I rubbed shoulders with a lot of really great, you know, jazz musicians, and I became a jazz artist. But I've never turned my back on the fact that I grew up playing a lot of old cowboy tunes, you know, and a lot of bluegrass music, but a lot of old country tunes, and not like current Nashville kind of country, like old cowboy tunes. And so I started blending the elements of jazz with, you know, and with these old cowboy tunes, using those cowboy tunes as vehicles to be a jazz, you know, or present a jazz work, I guess, you know, as an album. And so I did two records with kind of that as the focus. I did another record that followed my the records in this order were Lone Prairie, and then Factory Girl, and then Dusk. And Dusk was mostly original music that I wrote myself while I was in the phase of arranging old cowboy tunes. Mm-hmm. And so I was inspired to compose also. And so that record came about. But I'm actually going into the studio in 2 weeks. I've written a bunch of original music that I am recording. I'm putting myself in another uncomfortable situation because I think that's how you grow, is you have to find something that's uncomfortable, and then you put yourself in that situation as an artist, and you learn something by how you react. So I'm putting together a record that's all Afro-Cuban music and me. So it's all Afro-Cuban musicians and the kid from Smithfield, Utah, right? And they're going to be interpreting and, you know, arranging my music with me in the studio. And I'm really interested to see how this is going to turn out because they are masters at this music. And I know enough to just barely be dangerous. And so it's going to, you know, I'm really, you know, I'm excited, but I have to admit I'm a little nervous about putting myself in this situation because it's, you know, going to come out on the record label I'm with, and you know, nobody wants to put forward something that, you know, isn't your best work. But I just realized that, you know, I've been fortunate to grow quickly in certain, you know, genres and in certain styles because I haven't held myself back from being in uncomfortable situations. I was going to say, you know, I almost said, because I'm not scared to put myself in uncomfortable situations, but everybody's scared to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. But when you do that and you put yourself out there, then you have an opportunity to really grow. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my whole career, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I've always put together bands that I thought, you know, there was an element of musicianship that everybody I was, you know, working with, you know, it was superior to myself, and I'm there to, like, you know, I'm the band leader, yes, but I'm there to have these, you know, have this band push me and to make me be uncomfortable so that I can, you know, like grow in different ways. And I have had specific purposes for each one of my projects, you know, and the people that I hire to do that, and it's worked. I'm better after every, you know, project. I'm better after every concert.
Speaking of putting yourself in uncomfortable situations, uh-huh. You didn't always want to teach, right?
No.
That wasn't always your goal. You were traveling and you were
having
the number one jazz record in America, and you were with all these bands, and somehow you ended back here in little Logan, Utah,
right?
Teaching at this university. How did that happen?
Well, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, when I was in St. Louis, I was touring a ton, like 6 months out of the year I was on the road. And I was working for a really great music publishing company, and they were very supportive of my touring career and my recording career. I mean, they were integral in the early development of my career. But it got to a point where I realized I can't go any further in this company. I was the senior editor, and I was their clinician, and I was the AR guy for the record label, and really, I didn't answer to anybody other than the CEO, and it's a family-owned company, so I knew I was stuck. You know, like, I'm not going to go any further because the kids will, you know, come in. The family is going to stay, you know, the senior leadership. That's not going to be me. And so, really, it was in that space, it probably was the most high-profile job, you know, in the world, you know, as far as being a publishing and playing. And then I just walked away from it, you know, and it was because I just knew I couldn't go anywhere, and I didn't want to be stagnant. And I knew that, you know, that, I mean, there's a couple other reasons also. I thought we'd move back to Utah for a little while. I was touring so much, I thought I can live anywhere in the world and maintain that. But, you know, Logan's a really nice, beautiful place to live, and you know, we're only an hour and a half away from the airport. And sometimes people, you know, say, but you're an hour and a half away from the airport. I'm like, look, if I was living in LA, you're always an hour and a half from the airport. You know?
True, with the traffic there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, the distance is you're going 12 miles.
Yeah.
And I'm going 90 miles, you know, to get to the airport. So I wasn't sure if we were going to stay here, but then it just kind of worked out. And I have always liked teaching, but I just wasn't sure that I was going to be a professor. And so I started teaching, here a few days a week. And then I was also flying to Indiana University that has, I think it is the largest music school in the country, very prestigious school. And I pioneered the jazz guitar program there. So that was kind of a crazy schedule because I was teaching here 3 days a week and then every other week flying to Indiana. And the weeks that I wasn't in Indiana, I was on the road with one of, my projects, either, touring with my band or, doing a project for somebody else or being a guest clinician at a university or whatever. So I was really maintaining an insane schedule. And I think in 2014, I ended up, becoming the director of the guitar studies program. So now I'm really roped in, but I'm still recording. I'm still recording and I'm still touring and doing all of those things. Cause really I feel like, students that come to study, any kind of art, they deserve to study with somebody who's relevant and somebody who knows what's going on. Because, when I'm teaching my students, I do like the fact that I'm able to tell them, hey, this isn't something that I just read about. Like, this is what I did last week in the studio in, whatever town, this is what happened on my gig when I was on the road. It's relevant material.
Mm-hmm. So it's not talking about 30 years ago. It's talking about last weekend. Week. This happened to me.
Right.
This is how you can learn from it.
Right.
So speaking of, helping your students and giving them advice, what advice do you have for art students here at Utah State all over? What would you have to say to them?
Oh, man. Well, I probably have too much to say. The first thing would go back to, don't skip out on the fundamentals. I mean, sometimes, like musicians, and maybe this is true in art also, I'm not really sure, but sometimes students want to be at the top of the mountain really fast, and they end up skipping out on paying attention to the fundamentals of their craft. And I mean being perfect at the fundamentals. So if, I'm an improvising musician, so the things I have to really understand are the way that chords, or harmony and maybe melody scales work and work together. So that means I have to be 100% perfect at the most basic elements of that. Like, I have to be perfect at playing my arpeggios. Major, minor, diminished, augmented. Okay, and then it extends from there. Then it's, major 7, minor 7, minor 7 plus 5. It extends, but I can't be perfect at any of the advanced stuff until I'm perfect at the fundamental things. And I always use this analogy. I'm like, it's like being an Olympic athlete. I love watching the gymnasts, because other than running, I can do nothing that they do.
Same.
Right? Okay, so like a lot of other events, it's like, well, I can ride a bike, I'm just not as fast. Mm-hmm. Or, I can run or I can throw something, but I'm not as good. But gymnastics, other than running, I can't do anything they do. I can't do a cartwheel, I can't do a handstand, so I'm just mesmerized by this. But really, when you break it down, it's like the gold medal, well, forget the gold medalists, just the people that make it to the Olympics, they're perfect at all those individual things. Their run is perfect. Their cartwheel is perfect. Their back handspring is perfect. Their flip is going to be perfect. But it's how they put all of that together that separates like the gold medalist from either a non-medalist or even the silver or bronze medalist, right? And it's interesting to me that it all comes down to how good they are at the fundamentals, right? So if the fundamentals are perfect, then the advanced stuff is really just combining the fundamentals in different ways. And, for what I do as an improvising musician, that's really, a true thing. And I think it holds true for any style of music. And I'm willing to bet that it holds true for any kind of art also. Mm-hmm. I've talked about this with some of my friends who are surgeons. And I'm like, who's the best guy in your field? I was talking to a guy who's a orthopedic pediatric surgeon. And he rattled off some guy, and I said, well, what makes him the best? And he went, blah, 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 blah. It gave me this huge list of stuff, and I kind of boiled it all down in my mind and said, so what you're telling me is that guy knows how bones grow. And he's like, yeah, basically. And I was like, oh, well, what year in school do you learn that? And it turns out it's pretty early on. Like, it's a fundamental principle, right, that somebody understands on a very, very deep level. So the first, you know, and anyway, not to jump ship on that, but I guess what I was going to say is, so it's a fundamental principle that allows somebody to become world class. Mm-hmm. And I think students have a tendency to want to skip that stuff because
it's boring
and it's not exciting. But when people ask me, I get asked this all the time, like, what are you practicing right now? What are you working on? And it's like, it's the most boring stuff. I'm like, well, I pull out a piece of music, like a jazz standard or whatever, and I assess what the harmony is, and then I go through and I just play 1-3-5 arpeggios, like simple triadic arpeggios, over every chord, and I do it slow. And then I figure out how to start that, maybe that sequence in a different inversion, and work my way with good voice leading. And all of this stuff is like things you learn your first year of college, right? If you don't learn it before, some people learn it maybe in middle school or high school, but everybody knows it after their first year of college. And like, that's what I practice. And then, of course, you know, then I do some kind of sneaky stuff with those three notes that it would be considered maybe advanced. But I work every day on the fundamentals. My technique, it's all fundamentals. It's just the fundamentals. And then the advanced stuff will make more sense. So that would be the first thing I'd say mm-hmm. to students. The second thing I'd say is ask a lot of questions, you know. The students that seem to perform the best always have questions. They participate in, in engaging, dialogue in class. They ask questions outside of class. I was such a nuisance when I was a student. I had one teacher when I was in Florida that I used to go a half an hour early to my private lesson, and I'd sit outside the door because there was a guy, another student, that had a lesson before me, and he didn't practice as much as he was supposed to. And so about every third week, his lesson would end about half an hour early. The teacher
would be
like,
"So you could go in."
Well, and the thing was, I sat there and would look hungry. And my teacher was probably thinking, okay, I got a half an hour off. But then he'd look outside the door, and there I was standing there with my guitar. And he'd be like, "You're here early?" And I'd be like, "Yeah." And he's like, "You want to come hang out?" And I'd be like, "Yes, I do." And sometimes it was as simple as he's like, "Hey, I'm going to go get some, I'm going to go get some coffee. Do you want to walk with me?" And then I would ask him questions. Or he would say, "Hey, what are you working on outside of our lessons?" And I'd tell him, he'd say, "Hey, you ought to think about that this way." And then I would write it down. And then I was like, I was getting an extra lesson, right?
Yeah, that's smart.
And so every chance I got, I was just asking people questions. And so what I see, and not just here at our university, because I travel to universities all around the world, is that the students that really excel are the ones that aren't afraid to ask a lot of questions. And they're also the ones that stick out in your professor's mind. And so when it comes time for a professor to give a referral to somebody, those are the students that are, they're there. They're in the memory bank. They're the closest to the tongue, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. So that, you get those referrals, and that can launch an entire career.
There you go. So going back to the basics.
Basics, work on the fundamentals, ask questions,
perfect.
And then show up prepared.
Yeah.
Like just trust that your teachers know what they're talking about.
Because they do.
And if you think they don't, all you have to do is like look at the track record of students. Look at the alumni. What are the alumni doing? Have they succeeded? Are they doing great things? Yes, they are. I mean, I did that when I was in Willie Aiken's band in St. Louis. I'm like, man, this guy knows exactly what to tell me, because I can look at the drummer or the two, like last two drummers that were in this band, and look at where their career's doing. And this prepared them to be in this band and this band and this band that are out like internationally touring. And it's like, yeah, obviously, this guy's got his act together. I already knew he did because I'd listened to him play. And I'm like, he's amazing. But if I ever had to wonder, then you just look at like what the results are.
Yeah, that's perfect. So we're coming up to the end here. Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we close? Something you were hoping to say?
No, I'm happy, that you asked me to do this, and hopefully some of the things I've said will help, help students moving forward. I think, maybe the greatest thing about being an artist of any type is that we get to create things.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
And that's, it's fun, but for me, it really becomes like it's a stewardship or a mantle, that we've been entrusted with. And And so for me, it really is important to just make the best art that I can. And it ties into all of those things that I've talked about, like taking care of the basics and, you know, the fundamentals, asking questions, showing respect to your mentors, you know, trying to surround yourself with the right mentors, you know, those kinds of things. It's just very, very important. But it really is a blessing that we get to do what we do.
It is. And again, thank you so much for joining us. I know that I've learned a lot, and I hope that everybody else has. And again, thank everyone for listening to this podcast. I hope that it inspired you to work on your art and to become better artists. So thank you so much.